3, 2.
And now, for members only, I'm your host, Sean Jackson. Limitations. We all have them, don't we? And that's especially true when it comes to the products and services that we sell. They are limited. Limited in appeal, limited in what they can do. It's just the nature of the way that the world operates. While some think limitations are a weakness, I actually think limitations are a strength. Reminds me of a story I once heard about Herb Kelleher, the founder of Southwest Airlines. Southwest is a highly profitable airline that really pioneered the low-cost airline approach here in the United States. And Herb is an audacious character. He looks like he comes out of central casting for a gregarious Texas businessman. He's a chain-smoking, hard-drinking, very funny and personable individual who really helped define both the culture and organization that became Southwest Airlines we know today. And there's a great story about a lady who flew on Southwest Airlines, and she sent a letter to Herb. She was not happy with her experience. She was not happy with the fact that they served peanuts instead of a meal like other airlines. She was not happy with the fact that instead of assigned seating, that they boarded people in groups and let everyone on at one time. She was not happy with the fact that the flight attendants didn't seem as professional as some of the other flight attendants she experienced on other airlines. And she concluded her letter with the statement that she would never fly Southwest Airlines again. And Herb replied back with a simple sentence, "We'll miss you." I think a lesser man would have just replied, "F off." In this episode of Members Only, we're going to talk about how to use your limitations as strengths to make what you sell unique in the market. So stay tuned.
Hey, Jared Morris here. If you know anything about Rainmaker Digital and Copyblogger, you may know that we produce incredible live events. Well, some would say that we produce incredible live events as an excuse to throw great parties, but that's another story. We've got another one coming up this October in Denver. It's called Digital Commerce Summit, and it is entirely focused on giving you the smartest ways to create and sell digital products and services. To get all the details and the very best deal on tickets, head over to rainmaker.fm/summit. That's rainmaker.fm/summit.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Jackson, and I'm joined by the intelligent and always delightful Jessica Frick. Frick, how are you today?
I'm great, Jackson. How are you?
Very well, very well. You know, I really was excited about the last episode we did about the homepage. I thought it went very well, and I wanted to get your opinion on. What did you think?
I liked it, too. But, you know, something's been sticking with me, Sean. I got to be honest with you.
Okay.
We gave all this great information, but we didn't tell people how to do it.
What do you mean in particular? What did we leave out?
Well, it's great to have general ideas on how to make your homepage rock, but how do you target people? How do you pick your audience? How do you decide who is the right buyer for you?
That's a good point. That's a good point. And that was something we didn't really go into depth on. And it kind of drives me crazy, too, because everyone in marketing says, make sure you target the right people, target these people, target, et cetera. It's like there's a giant bullseye running around on people and you got to pick which one. And I think you're right. I think we need to really define it. We need to give people a formula. Jess, I think that's what we need to do. We need to give them a formula so they can apply it. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot of money to be made in prolonging the problem. But, you know, we're about solutions. And I think that some concrete steps would be helpful.
I agree. So let's go through the formula that I think can work for our audience on how they can define who their target audience is. Okay. And I'm going to define the formula with two parts of the same equation. The first is who can benefit from your product or service, and then who do you want to benefit from your product or service? All right. Now, the first part of that, who can benefit from your product and service, is about resources. And I think it's about the limitation of resources, using those limitations as a strength. So what are some of the limitations, the logistical limitations of any product or service out there? Doesn't matter. What do you think, Jess?
Time, money,
Yeah.
Capabilities, experience level.
Yes, I agree with that. And time being the number one, right? I mean, there's only so many hours in the day. Doesn't matter how rich or poor you are. There's just 24 hours in a day. And if you're a consultant, you're not spending all your waking working hours doing work for a client. You also have to run a business, right?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
That's right. Exactly. And I think that's the thing that we often forget is that time is a universal limiting factor. Even if you have a whole staff of people like we do, there is a limit to the amount of capacity that you have in any product or service. And that limitation is a good thing. And I'll give you an example, Jess. When you did consulting work, let's just assume that you worked 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. You took 2 weeks off for vacation. How many hours did you actually spend on doing work for your business?
Well, I know with traditional vacation and all of that, you get 20-80 hours a year. Figure in lunch, maybe the occasional Netflix binge on a slow day. Shh, I don't do that at work anymore, Sean, I promise. No, I sometimes do. But you also have to bill people.
Yeah.
You have to work out, you know, resources for, you know, what if you need a new computer? Like That's it right. takes time to buy that.
That's right. I would argue that in a 50 work week year at 40 hours of work per week, you have about 2000 hours of work that you are doing. But all that work is not centered on fulfilling the promises to your clients. Certainly, as Jess pointed out, you're working on your business, you're meeting people, you're working on your marketing, you're balancing your books, you're doing a whole variety of other things. In fact, I would argue that probably 50% of a solo practitioner's time is actually spent doing work for their clients. That's 1,000 hours. So if you have 1,000 hours, right, and you break that up by month, that's only about 96 hours of actual client work that you're doing. So you automatically have a limitation of time. And that time means that you can only do so much in any given month for a client. And that becomes, I think, a strength. Because instead of saying, oh, I do work for anyone, you could basically say, I can only do work for 10 people. Hence, I have a limit of 10 and I will only work with 10 clients. And guess what? I have 2 slots open.
Yeah, but what if you want to make more money?
Then you charge more, which we're going to talk about another episode, because when you have limits, then limits give you the ability to charge more. If your product or service has constraints, which they all do, turn them into a benefit. For example, you remember the old teaching sales, Jessica?
Of course.
And it was limited, right? It was limited to the number of people that could enter that program. Recently, Jess, what did we launch up that also had a limitation?
Authority.
We also launched up the certification program, right?
Yep. I bundled them.
No, it's okay. But that's the point, though, is that there is a certain amount of capacity that we as a large company can do for our customer base. And so that becomes a strength because we only took so many people into certification. We only took so many people into teaching sales. In other words, those limits, those constraints, which normally are seen as a weakness, are actually very powerful. They're compelling. Well, why do you only have this many left? I mean, it's kind of like when you go to a restaurant, right? And they say, well, we only have 10 lobsters left. And you're like, well, heck, I don't even like lobster, but they must be really good, right?
Yeah.
So that's my point, is that when you look at your limitations, even skill sets, right? You know, I only have skill to do X. Turn that into a strength. It's not a weakness. It's a strength. So look at your limitations. Your actual limitations of time, of skills, of resources, of capabilities, and think of them not as a weakness, but think of them as something to promote, as something that makes it that compelling, that something that makes it different. If you don't want to wait 120 days for your client to pay you, then say you only take credit cards, right? That distinguishes you out. Find those quote unquote weaknesses of the actual constraints of time, resources, money, whatever you have, and think of them as a strength, as something that differentiates you in the marketplace.
But what if somebody who's checking out your service only wants to pay with a check?
Well, then you probably will say no, or you may make accommodations. But I doubt that you should make accommodations, and here's why. Because the moment you start accommodating people, then processes break up, then time gets messed up. In other words, we have seen, and actually we have done it here at the company, is that there's been times when really big companies wanted to do X, but we could not provide it to them and we had to turn them down. I actually think that you make more money saying no than when you say yes. Because sometimes when you say yes, you've overcommitted the resources that you have and you end up failing in fulfilling the promise that you give to those people.
I read an article about David Bowie talking about how his legacy was not in what he said yes to, but what he said no to.
That's right. And I think every successful investor will say the same thing. I think any successful business person will say the same thing, is that by appreciating the limitations that you have and using them as benefits, knowing that you're going to have to say no sometimes, will actually help you create a better exclusive offering and will target people that will find an affinity for those limitations.
So, Sean, how do you decide where the lines are? I mean, are there negotiable boundaries or do you just pick your boundaries and that's it?
I think when you're starting out, you have to pick your bound. I think you have to really set a line in the sand, but be flexible enough. I mean, back to your example, if you say you only take credit card, but everybody is asking to send you a check, then you probably will have to adjust. Right? That you'll have to figure out how to, because the demand of the market is there. But it, when you're starting, you can put some lines in the sand. And because you own your own business or you have control of the product or service that you sell, you can adapt to the market, but you at least need to start out and saying, this is what we are. These are the limitations that we have, and we're going to use those limitations as strengths, and we can always change them in the future if demand is there. But I will say this, I have seen time and time again where somebody has sold to a customer that they never should have sold to, and their resources get consumed. They got a client in, and their client completely sucked their time down, and they sucked at trying to service the other people that were relying on them. So I think the general rule is you can be flexible, but just put the line in the sand and enforce it. Because the stronger that you enforce it, the more affinity you will find from people that appreciate that limitation as a benefit. Make sense?
It does, and I dig that. So when you're picking your target, first step is figure out what you want out of a client. And the second step is figure out, first step is what you can give to a client. And The second step is what you want out of them.
That's right. That's the better way, is what are your limitations? You have to know that first, because to your second point, which is, you know, what type of client or customer do you want for that product or service that you're selling? So there's two parts of the formula. What can you do? Logistical limitations turned around as positive benefits. The other part of it is back to, whom do you want to work with, right? Because I mean, even if you're a sole online creature, there's going to be interactions you're going to have with your customer or clients at some point. So who do you want to work with? I mean, you told me a long time ago when you were doing consulting work, right? And there were clients that you did really well with and clients that you didn't do well with. So talk about that for a second.
You know, it took a lot of soul searching. And funny enough, I was driving through a cornfield one day and it hit me. I do my best working with super type A personalities.
And that's why I'm your boss.
As a company included. It's not for everybody. A lot of people, I mean, Sean, you know I love you, but a lot of people would work with you and be like, what the hell is with this guy? Like,
yeah, pretty much everyone else in the company. But yes, I get that. So.
But I get it. And it energizes me. Like, I am fueled by your passion. But a lot of people would look at it and be totally turned off. So it's really about knowing who you want to work with. I'm not good with more passive personalities. It's just not what keeps me going.
That's right. And I would say that that is an important part of making you distinct and unique, is that knowing whom you would like to work with, whom do you think you can be of most service, of most benefit with the product or service that you're selling. Because if you're having to deal with people that drain your energy so that you truly dread every time you have to interact with them, then you will not find success. And further, you're going to fail and you're going to suck and you're going to be miserable. And why go through that? So as you're thinking about your target audience, it's not just about the limitations of the constraints that you have and making the benefits. It's also about whom you would like to deal with the most. Whom do you find success with? Whom is it that you can really help them on their journey to whatever future promise that you're making them? Because if you can't figure that out, then you're going to be unhappy. And quite frankly, unhappiness manifests itself in lower sales, lower performance, lower everything. right?
So Sean, do you have to go super niche? Like I'm thinking, for example, my previous consulting business wasn't just project management. It was project execution. Mm-hmm. I took it full circle. And I worked with specifically digital entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Do you have to go super micro? Like, for example, a copywriter who focuses only on apparel businesses.
I think you should. I absolutely think you should. Because if you're going to go that means that you feel like you have something unique and special that you can help them with, right? That you can zero in like a laser beam. And here's why. And I love this quote. Even if those people are only one in a million, that still means there's 7,000 of those people out there, right? Because there's 7 billion people on the planet. And if you're one in a million and your customer is one in a million, still means there are 7,000 people that could benefit from what you have to offer. We live in a big world. We live in a dynamic world. We live in a world without boundaries due to the internet. And it's okay to be that niche. If you feel like those are the people that you can not only help, but find fulfillment in helping them. And that, I think, when you combine your limitations of the constraints of what you do, what your product or service provides, combined with whom you want to work with, that equation equals the unique selling proposition of your product or service. Because there will be competitors out there. There will be people who do very similar things to what your product or service provides. But they're not going to have the same constraints that you have, that you are turning around into a benefit. And they're not going to be focusing on people that you want to work with. And I think when you look at that, combining those two together, that's the unique selling proposition. That is the person that you're targeting. You're not trying to target the masses. You're trying to target people who have that will find those constraints as benefits and that you find value and fulfillment in meeting their objectives. And when you put those together, now you are different. Now you have something that no matter how many people are in your marketplace, it changes the way that you talk to them because some people will hate those limitations and not want to do business with you. Some people you may hate to do business with and you're not going to do it. And I think when you look at those together, that is the unique selling proposition. That's the way you differentiate yourself. That also makes it easier for you to quote unquote target because there's only going to be certain amounts of people who find that combination compelling. And remember, even if it's just one in a million, that's an audience of 7,000 people. Make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me. And, you know, speaking as the consumer, it would make me feel more special, even though now I know that when you tell me I'm one in a million, you actually mean. Yeah. But as a consumer, it makes me feel more special to know that, yes, you're going to take my money mm-hmm. to be a member of your site, mm-hmm. but you're not taking everyone's money. I'm part of a group that's going to get your attention. You've obviously picked this number because you want to make sure you can answer my questions.
That's right.
And you want to make sure you have the resources to, you know, attend to me. Mm-hmm. Not like, you know, that guy who limits his ebook sales to 100. I mean, come on. At a certain point, the scarcity thing, it's so easy to spot. But if it's actual scarcity for sure. a reason, I feel like that makes your customer feel more valuable. And going back to what you were saying about just 10 clients, mm-hmm. if I was your client and I knew I was one of 10, I don't know that I'd want to lose my spot.
That's right. And that's, again, based on taking your limitations and then finding the people that you want to work with. And I think, again, it's just it goes to that point that you just made about scarcity, because we know from economics that things that are scarce are things that are expensive, right? That are things that you pay a premium to obtain because they are scarce. And so I think when we talk about the general concept of exclusivity and talking about audience targeting, by thinking of limitations as strengths, of thinking of whom we want to work with, we create up that unique selling proposition, and that USP makes it at a premium for what we can charge because there's only going to be so many people that will appeal to those things. And that, I think, is the most exciting part, because I think it's so easy to get in that trap of, I just want anyone and everyone with a checkbook, you know, to buy what I've got. And it never works. I mean, it never works. Look at all the favorite companies that you love and like, right? If you're an Apple fan, oh my gosh, I mean, you're probably rabid about the new iPhone that's coming out, right?
And yet, I totally ordered my watch already. It's right. A cult, man.
Exactly.
And I'm a proud member.
But you know who doesn't have that? All those people that have those Samsung phones, right? Or all those people that have an alternative phone, right? Because they look at it, the Apple products, and go, oh, thank you for catching up with all the features we've had for years, right? I mean, they will gravitate to something else because not everyone will want to buy the product or service you have. And that's okay, because the less people that want to buy it, the irony is going to be that you can charge more for it. And you may find you are so much more successful in the products and services you sell by limiting that appeal to people that appreciate the scarcity of resources that you have, that you've turned into a benefit, and the fact that you are passionate or able to help specific types, not all types.
Totally.
So I think, go ahead.
I've got a question for you, Sean. So this is members only.
Yes.
And we're all about membership sites and, you know, developing that perfect community. How do you know if you're too different with your unique selling proposition? Like, how do you know if you've gone over the line?
I think the audience will let you know, right? I think you'll hear a common thread. I mean, in anything that you do, there's going to be fans and there's going to be foes, right? And I think being highly attuned and being willing to adapt, but not to compromise, right? Adapting to an environment doesn't necessarily mean you are inherently having to compromise your entire business structure. I think when you start to get your product or service out there, give it the time that it needs to appeal to that audience. And it will take time to do that. And if you're listening, if you're engaging, if you're dealing with people that you want to deal with, you will find over time that they will share their stories of success that they achieve from you with others out there that are like-minded. And so it's so easy to think, well, I just launched my membership site and all of a sudden nobody's joined up except my mom and my uncle. And, you know, it's a failure. No. It's just that you haven't given enough time and you're not communicating specific enough to an audience that really will resonate with those limitations that you have imposed on yourself that also exist in the way you operate. So I wouldn't get too freaked out by, you know, immediate responses. I would wait to let things gel up and then listen to the audience, be adaptive to them, but don't necessarily compromise and try to make it something for everyone. Because we know, if nothing else, the moment that you make it for everyone, you've lost the distinctive character of what your product and service is. And in doing so, you lower the price, you commoditize it, and then you have to deal with a whole bunch of people you never wanted to deal with to begin with. So, Jess, did we answer your question on whom to target?
You did.
Good.
But I'm not going back to consulting.
So Jess, that wraps up another episode of Members Only. And I think on the next episode, we're going to go a little bit more into the exclusivity and premium pricing on the next time we get together. Any parting thoughts for the show?
One in a million, Sean.
For my 6,999 of my peers, I thank you. And we'll catch you next time on Members Only.